is work and it's hard to throw balls and it's very physically demanding, but actually, what a privilege. You know, I get to wear shorts and a t-shirt hopefully most days. So I get a lot of performance and enjoyment out of it.
Welcome to another Cricket Scotland podcast with me, Jake Perry. After such a challenging time of late, it's great to see some light starting to shine on Scottish cricket once again with the news that, as of today, June 29th, cricket activity can begin again. Restrictions are still in place, of course, but with training able to get going at last, what had seemed a distant dream of competitive cricket not so long ago is that little bit closer to becoming a reality. We've certainly missed it. And there's been more fantastic news for Scotland this week with the announcement that Catherine and Sarah Bryce have been awarded contracts with the East Midlands Regional Hub, which is part of the ECB's new domestic structure for elite women's cricket in England. With only 25 contracts handed out in total, it says it all about just how Catherine and Sarah are regarded, and it's a great testament to their work ethic and dedication, as well as to the strength of the women's game in Scotland too. Very many congratulations to them both. Like everything else, the pause button has been pressed on the national men's team for the duration of lockdown, with what has been a big summer of international matches cancelled and the contracted players on furlough. Earlier in the week, I caught up with head coach Shane Berger to chat about the restart, as well as his own journey from first-class cricketer to national coach.
Well, obviously elated that we can get back to some sort of cricketing activity. I think, you know, first and foremost, just for the general well-being and health of the population to get out and play sport, and especially being cricket with the great weather we're having at the moment, you know, I think, you know, what could be better getting out and playing some cricket? I know it's going to be in a training environment, and there's still going to be all sorts of, you know, procedures in place in terms of social distancing and washing your hands. And I don't think we're getting away from that anytime soon. But to get back and at least have training is certainly something that's going to help the cricketing population of Scotland. You know, we probably never thought it would come back as quickly as it has, but the fact that it has, I think, is an absolute bonus. So it'll be great for men and women of all ages to get involved in cricket. You know, it'll be great for coaches to get back involved, and everybody else who's attached to the game of cricket, I'm sure, is really craving a bit of cricketing activity. So hopefully that leads into some matches at the back end of the season. Not sure if that's going to be, you know, regional cricket or club cricket or even international cricket, but at least it's certainly a step in the right direction.
It's been so difficult, hasn't it, watching cricket getting going in countries elsewhere and everybody here just itching to go as well.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it was amazing to turn on the telly the other night and watch a bit of live sport. I was watching some golf and some other cricket that was on and whatever. And it's great to see sport coming back in football. Sorry, that's the other sport I was going to mention. And, you know, when sport comes back into people's lives, there seems to be this extra injection of energy that gets injected into the population. And, you know, what would life be without sport, you know, and what would life be without culture and music and being able to gather and go watch a concert or a musical, or, you know, just you only really appreciate those things when it all gets taken away from you. Probably a great message to the players. You know, I just think in terms of, what have you learned during this period? You know, what have you reflected on? What are the things you've really missed? Has it given you an opportunity to spend time with family and friends and maybe make a few, you know, just reconnect on that level? And have you missed the game? You know, it's really a good question to self-reflect on. And hopefully, I have no doubt, when you do get back to activity, people just appreciate it so much more.
Yeah, that's certainly. And talking of the playing staff, they've been on furlough for the last few months, of course. What's that meant in terms of your role and the day-to-day routine of the group?
Yeah, Jack, as much as I've still been working, you know, I'm very much, a coach that likes being out there and being, you know, sort of doing all the physical things that is of demanding of a coach. You know, I'm not necessarily one of those that sits in an office and relies on a hell of a lot of data. I really like to get involved and throw balls and try and make an impact in that sort of way, you know, and really interact with players. And I suppose that's been the real miss for me personally, and I know for a few of the other coaches and staff. So from that point of things, it'll be great to get back involved and throw some cricket balls. I'm probably going to have to loosen up the shoulder again and really, really get back into it slowly. But from that side of, you know, it's really, we've really missed it. But again, it gives us an opportunity to maybe focus on other things, you know, one or two other things that we might not always have the chance to focus on. So whether that be a little bit of admin work, whether that be really, you know, chatting to a few other people involved in different sports that might help you out in your own department. So to answer your question, it's been very much Zoom meetings like this. It's been very much on the phone trying to touch base with players. But then, you know, there's also, it's a bit of a double-edged sword because you don't want to overly engage yourself because sometimes they might want a bit of space. So I think it's also trying to understand each and every single player and understand what they really need. So some players need more care and attention and some players just want to be left a little bit alone during this period. So, but I think from a organizational point of view, we've been really good in keeping in touch with fellow staff members, whether they be furloughed or not, and trying to keep them up to date with all the activity that's taking place and all the good and exciting things to look forward to.
One thing we have lost, of course, has been a good deal of cricket that was planned for the summer, cancellation of the summer internationals, the postponement of a couple of rounds of Cricket World Cup League 2, although we hope that they'll be rescheduled. And there's, of course, all the talk around the T20 World Cup and whether that will go on time as well. Everything's still a wee bit unclear at the moment, but what are your hopes for the remainder of the year?
It's a good question. I think, you know, if you look in one of our priorities, trying to get as competitive cricket as we can, and as many fixtures as possible that are really of a competitive nature, whether that be full members, whether that be A-side cricket, regional cricket, whatever it might be. We had a summer packed full of a hell of a lot of exciting cricket to look forward to. You know, unfortunately, we've lost all of that. And I suppose the future in terms of what is to come is still unknown. And I suppose that uncertainty might create a bit of anxiety for people, not knowing what's ahead of them. You know, we're looking at a return to training program at the moment, but I suppose the big question you have to ask yourself is, you know, what are you really returning to training for? You know, what competitions are there in the future? The World Cup hasn't been postponed as yet, as you mentioned, but I think there's a really big likelihood that it will be, and we just got to come to terms with that, you know, and we're going to have to make sure that whenever the World Cup gets thrown at us, we're ready for it, and we're ready to go there, not just compete, but to win, you know, and that for us is really important. So we were making fantastic strides before the lockdown to make sure that we were ready for competition this year. I think we were doing some really good things. The players had really bought into everything that we'd thrown at them. And it would have been really interesting to see how we had gone with all our fixtures. By now, we would have played the New Zealand fixtures. We would have had a couple of rounds of Cricket World League 2. So it would have been really nice to see where we would have been. But hey, you know, that's the cards that have been thrown to us have just said to us that we are not in that position. So, you know, I go back to my point earlier about, you know, what other lessons can we learn during this period without playing competitive cricket? You know, maybe a break of this nature is what a few of the players might have needed, just a mental break from the game and being able to pick up one or two other various different skills at this point could be really valuable to them over this time. You know, a good example also is you could also say to a player, well, we've had 3-4 months off. It's actually like being injured in a way. You know, so you've gone away, you've picked up a serious injury, you've gone and had an operation, you're doing your rehab and you've got to deal with that mentally and physically and everything else. So that's another way to also look at it for some of the athletes that might have missed out during this time is you've been away, you've been injured. So actually, you know, have you done all the right things to make sure that you're ready to get back and back fitter and stronger and better than you were when you left the game? So we still, as an organisation, are looking at getting fixtures. You know, Jake, we really want to make sure that we fill the back end of the year, if possible, with as many fixtures as we can. Obviously, the winter starts end of September. So, you know, that's for the powers that be to make sure that we get some fixtures in, and hopefully we can have cricketing games or matches at the back end of the summer.
Keeping with the positive, but turning to something a little bit different rather than looking to the slightly unclear future, we can look at the certain past at least. We've got a chance to explore something we haven't really had much opportunity to talk about before, which is your own background, your playing career and your journey into coaching. Adrian Neil was my guest on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he described how big a part sport played in his life as a young lad growing up in South Africa and how that was the case for pretty much everyone else too. So what were your early years like in Johannesburg?
Well, I listened to Adrian's podcast and it was so interesting listening to him speak, and he did a great job with it was a really nice podcast to listen to. I think, you know, growing up as a young South African you know, sportsman as such, is you get born into a world of sport. If I look back in my childhood, you know, I had a father who was a coach at that time. I had a mother who was a hockey player. My dad played rugby, but he then actually became a professional tennis coach. So when I was born, I was basically born with a tennis racket in my hand and forced to play sports, you know, kicking rugby balls, you know, hitting golf balls from a young age. So we really encouraged from a young age to get out and play as much sports as possible. Well, I certainly was, and I was very fortunate to be in an environment that allowed that. The other great thing in South Africa is the weather, you know, so whether it's summer or winter, you can still get out and play sport outdoors. You don't have to get into an indoor hall, which I know is sometimes a massive frustration for living in the UK, you know, so that certainly helps. I was thrust into a sporting environment, and one thing I can tell you for sure, Jake, is as much as I don't think I'm stupid, I think I certainly wasn't that keen on the books. I was more keen on the sporting, being involved in sport and being on the field, that's for sure. So growing up in that sort of environment and having a dad that really encouraged me to go out and play all sorts of different sports, and I think that's something that we're moving a little bit away from in the modern era. You know, we talk about specializing too early. You know, I really believe that kids should go out and try a whole bunch of different sports. I think it's really good, especially if you want to take up cricket, to the ability to hit a golf ball, play tennis, play squash, or whatever other sports that might be involved is really good for your personal development. So you name the sport, I pretty much played it as from a young age.
So when was it that cricket became the thing that was going to be your career?
You probably won't believe me if I say it, but cricket was very much on the back burner. I just played cricket because it was a game that my mates were playing, and I thought, well, I can't miss out, you know. So I got involved in cricket, and I suppose I started realizing that I was a pretty decent cricketer when I was about 15, 16 probably. And I only then really, you know, took the game up professionally at the age of 19. So things happened pretty quickly. And the main reason for it really was I didn't want to go to university. You know, I didn't know what I wanted to do after school. I certainly didn't want to study, that was for sure. I was quite happy to take a year out and get involved in some sort of academy of some sort. So I applied to go to a cricket academy, and the rest is history. You know, you ate, slept and drank cricket for 7-8 months. And I knew straight away this is what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So cricket probably was a very late decision. Before that was a few other sports, but we probably weren't in a financial situation back then to allow me to play golf or take up baseball or anything like that, or take it on professionally. So mom and dad were very clear that we didn't have the financial background to do that. You know, so you've got to be sometimes quite lucky enough also to take on the sports that you want to, you know, because they can be quite costly. So for me, cricket came at a very late stage in my life.
And what was the pathway up to your first class debut with Gauteng?
Yeah, it's a good question, you know, and actually upon reflection, I actually probably leave out some really important information. School cricket was great because school cricket really allowed us to play a lot of cricket. So we'd have a fixture every Wednesday and Saturday in terms of school cricket. It gave us an opportunity to play against some really strong schools. And then I at the age of 15, I was really enjoying my cricket, and I became a member of a club called Old Parktonians, which was really a good stepping stone for me in terms of my development as a cricketer, because I found school cricket was you know, came pretty easy. But when it got into club cricket, you're suddenly playing against grown men, you know, who are running in and bowling really quickly, and they're abusing you, and they're calling you all sorts of things under the sun, and you've just got to take it on the chin, you know. So you grow up pretty quickly every weekend. So not only are you playing on a Wednesday and a Saturday at school, but you're then having to arrive at your club game, whether that be first, second, third, or maybe fourth team. And you as a 15-year-old have to arrive and go and play with a whole bunch of men. So I'm a huge advocate of club cricket. I think club cricket is a fantastic pathway to learning the game and you know, involving yourself with various different ages and experience levels. And I think quite often we forget that, you know, the importance of club cricket. I certainly learned a lot of my cricket at club cricket, and then that probably evolved as I got into the academy system from there.
So with your coach's hat on, looking back, how would you describe yourself as a player?
Wow, that's such a good question. with my coach's hat on, thinking back on my career now, I can quite honestly say that I seriously don't think I fulfilled my potential. I think if I look back on my playing career, I mean, whilst I'm very happy with some of the numbers and some of the stats that I might have achieved, I look back and go, well, if I actually was able to do some of the very things that I might be preaching currently, you know, I think I could have evolved my game and made myself a better cricketer, you know. I think I was very fortunate to grow up in an era where I was surrounded by some fantastic players, some fantastic coaches who really helped and guided me and supported me. But I think we now live in an era where the coach dictates a little bit more, whereas I was probably more in an era where some of the senior players might have guided and mentored players a bit more. So to answer your question, I don't think I quite fulfilled my potential. I think especially with bat in hand, I think I would have maybe looked to have played spin a little bit differently, you know, with all the advancement now in techniques of sweeping and reverse sweeping and lapping and all this sort of stuff. Yes, we did it, but I don't think we were encouraged to do it. And I think that's the difference. You know, we didn't get given the positivity that we give the players now to go out and really express yourself. But that might have also been my own insecurity, looking into the way I played. I was quite a methodical sort of cricketer. I like to make sure that things look pretty good and everything. But actually, looking back now, especially in where the white ball game has got to, I think I would have liked to have released myself a little bit more. But I certainly found that probably more in the back end of my career, and hence why my white ball cricket, I think, went to another level at the back end of my career. But it was a little bit too late.
Such a human thing, isn't it? Hindsight, you do so many things differently if you could do them again.
Absolutely. You know, what's it in life? You know, they always say, if you knew what you knew now, you know, what kind of a player would you have been? And I certainly look back and go, if I could have done some of the things and get awarded some of the opportunities that they are presented right now, with some of the young cricketers, you know, under 19 World Cups, Women's World Cups, you know, you just think about where the game has evolved to, and it's fantastic of all races, colours, ability levels. You know, it's brilliant that everybody can get involved in the game of cricket. And now you look at all the T20 competitions around the world and the sorts of money you can make. You know, you can create a little niche for yourself in the markets. And I think it's a very exciting time for any young cricketer looking to come through the system.
You mentioned the stats, and when you retired, I mean, you had the best part of 4,000 first-class runs and 171 wickets to your name. When you look back on your playing days now, what are your fondest memories?
Oh, you know, quite often you'll talk about that 100 or that fifer, which are certainly wonderful memories, and you'll never lose those. And, you know, I remember starting out, some of my best memories, making my debut was a fantastic memory. I always had a passion to want to make my first-class debut, and you always hope for that first game. You know, you pray and wish that first game's going to happen. And then you kind of, when it does happen, you doubt yourself. You know, you doubt whether you're good enough to be at that level. And then you take that first wicket and you score that first run and you take that first catch, and the confidence builds, you know. And then your goals and your ambitions might change. You know, then suddenly you want to get 50 wickets and 100 wickets. And if you had told me I would have achieved the numbers that I did, I probably wouldn't believe you at the time, having played close to 100 first-class games. I'm really chuffed with my stats. But some of the best memories were the memories I shared with my mates in the dressing room, the trophies we might have won, the camaraderie with the players, whether that be old and young. I mean, taking the wicket of Tendulkar was probably the highlight for me personally in my life. It's a moment you can never quite explain, or the feeling that you get, you know, it beats anything out there. I scored 100 against an England bowling lineup, which I'll never forget. It wasn't classified as a first-class 100 at that time because it wasn't a first-class game. And the England lineup was they just kept bringing them in because it was a warm-up practice game. And it's probably the best innings I've ever played in my life on that particular day in Pretoria. And we scored over 400 runs against a full England bowling attack, which is one of my proudest moments at that time. But that doesn't go down on the stats, you know. I think the biggest thing for me, Jake, has been what the game has given to me and the relationships it's allowed me to create, not only with coaches and fellow players, but just with fans, with having the privilege of putting on a shirt that some people would give anything to put on, you know. Walking around, being able to autograph a youngster's bat, you know, you look back at all these times, those are the things you probably miss the most, you know. Not that it's fame or anything like that, but more just you're achieving a lifelong dream, and a lot of people wish they could do that, and you're very fortunate to have that.
So you played first-class cricket for Gauteng and Lions, KwaZulu-Natal, but what I found really fascinating looking at the stats and the records was the time that you spent with Radlett Cricket Club in Hertfordshire. How was that experience?
Well, it's a great story, and we could probably have a very long podcast if we just talk about Radlett in itself. They hold a very close place to my heart because I was there for 12 years. You know, I played over 500 games of cricket for them, you know, so very much a second home for me. You know, I used to come over in the South African winters and spend every summer at Radlett. I'll tell you how this started off for me. I got offered an opportunity to go to Radlett in 2004. I'll never forget Jimmy Cook, who was my coach at that time in South Africa, who most people will know. Jimmy played for Somerset, absolute legend. And he came across to me and gave me the offer from Radlett and said, look, I think you would really enjoy going and be a good experience for you. You're 21 years old now. You need to get out and go and experience life and a different cricketing culture. And I went across at the age of 21. And I had to take on the director of coaching role at that time. And you're telling guys who are double your age what to do, and you're trying to set up coaching programs for young kids. And I think in many ways that's where my love of coaching was kind of born, you know, and taking on responsibility at a young age. I really enjoyed it. So Radlett not only gave me an amazing opportunity to play more cricket during the winter, but it gave me a real good opportunity to start my coaching career and really build my confidence levels and my knowledge and engage in what is, I think, has really helped me in this job is a UK culture, you know, from quite a young age, and understand how things are done in the UK, understand how coaching programs are implemented, what pitches are like over here, what conditions are like. And I think that's really helped me, especially in this first little bit of time here in the Scottish job. If you read out Radlett's stats, I can't go back and tell you how I managed to do what I did there, because it just felt natural and normal to go back every year and keep doing that. So if I went there for the first year, and then every year was just another year, another year, another year. And before I knew it, I had a benefit year, and I would never have thought that going there. But I did 12 wonderful years at Radlett Cricket Club, and I made some really good friends, and I've even got a godchild there. So it's just amazing how that's all worked out.
That's a fantastic story. And so if you could say that your coaching career or the flame was lit there, how did it develop from there?
So, Jake, I actually played my final cricket game ever for Radlett Cricket Club. And I'll never forget at that time, I actually knew it would be my final game. And I got awarded, Grant Morgan, who's now the assistant coach, had left his post as KZN Inland head coach. And the job got offered to me. I was kind of groomed in an assistant coach sort of role / player to take over from him. But I think the plan originally was I was going to do it the following year. It would have allowed me to play one more season of cricket. It would have allowed me to get to 100 first-class games, which was a real goal of mine. And it would have given me another year's experience. I didn't really feel I was ready yet to take over the job. And I think I knew I could deliver the job, but I didn't really feel 100% confident. You know, you always have a little bit of self-doubt. And I'll never forget the phone call when Grant phoned me. I was actually in England. He said, listen, I'm moving on and you're going to get offered the job and I think you should take it. And that gave me real confidence, you know, right then to take it on. And I got the phone call and I knew that I actually got offered the opportunity to be player coach. And I just made the decision myself that I didn't think I could commit 100% still playing, because it doesn't become about your playing then. It actually becomes about you giving your time to look after 20 other people's careers. And I just felt that if I was going to still play, that wouldn't give me the best chance to be the best coach I could be at that time. So I played my final game for Radlett Cricket Club. I took the final wicket that won us the league, and I was the top scorer in my final game of cricket. So I ended off pretty well, and then I took on the coaching reins straight away. And that was, you know, nearing on 6 years ago now. And I haven't looked back since. Things happened pretty quickly. You know, I spent 3-4 years with Inland, did a bit of national duty too, which gave me good experience, worked with some really good players, and here we are in Scotland.
As you say, just 6 short years, but such success so far. Twice Cricket South Africa Coach of the Year, assistant coach to South Africa A, as you've said, National Academy. Some really, really special times you've had so far.
I have, Jake, you know, and I think if I look back, you know, those two awards that I won were very much because I still don't agree with it really, because the team did really well, you know, and they're basing that on the trophies that we won. And I don't often think that necessarily means if you're necessarily a coach of the year, if you've won all the trophies, you know. I think you can be a really good coach and actually make small margins with teams, and some people wouldn't even know about it. You know, what's the good old saying they say? If you win the games of cricket and the players are great, you know, but if you lose, the coach is really poor, you know, and that's, unfortunately, that's how we get branded as coaches sometimes. So I think it doesn't necessarily mean because you're just winning the whole time that you are doing something right as a coach, or you're doing anything wrong, you know. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword. Whilst those awards were fantastic to achieve, and I credit the players for those awards because they're just delivering what you're trying to see out on the park. I very much think it's all in perspective, though, and it's, you know, sometimes you can be doing a really good job when no one knows about it, and sometimes you can be doing a really poor job and you're getting all the plaudits for it. So it's I put it down to a little bit of luck too, but I think you also make your own luck, you know. I think but it's very special times to look back, and I think having the opportunity and what those trophies allowed was for me to work at a national level and to maybe accelerate my growth as a coach. And I think for me, that was probably the most important step, was working at a national academy level, understanding what true high performance really meant, understanding what an individual player really needs on a day-to-day basis, and just where the game has progressed to. Now, the game really has accelerated over the last 5 years, and the things cricketers can do nowadays are actually beyond belief, you know. And who knows where the player, you know, the interesting thing for us as coaches is we've got to think about where the game could be in 5 years' time.
So you've won trophies as a player, you've won trophies as a coach. How does the pride in the achievement differ between the two?
I actually feel that, and some might not agree with me, but in my playing days, winning those trophies and everything, it's a sense of achievement that you can't really describe. But I found as a coach, my enjoyment in winning and seeing players achieve their potential and going beyond that is more fulfilling. And I think I get more of a thrill and a rush out of coaching than I ever did as a player. And I suppose some will say nothing beats being out there and actually living it as a player. But I can tell you, I sometimes just sit back and go, what a great thrill out of coaching. And you know, and that for me, you know, I don't see myself. I don't work every day. You know, I don't see it as work. I see it as an absolute privilege to do what I do, and I see it as a. It almost comes. You know, you take it in your stride, and hopefully, it is work, and it's hard to throw balls, and it's very physically demanding. But actually, what a privilege! You know, I get to wear shorts and a t-shirt hopefully most days. So it's really. I get a lot of performance and enjoyment out of it.
What are your thoughts about where the Scottish team is then just at the moment?
I think I mentioned earlier, Jake, you know, we'd made really good strides before the lockdown. I saw a squad of players that had really knuckled down and worked, you know, really worked their socks off to go to another level. We set really high goals for the season and for the year, and that came from the players, which I think is really valuable. You know, I think when they're setting the goals and they're setting the standards, I think that's far more valuable than us doing that. And in saying that, I think, you know, we're working towards achieving those goals. I really do believe that. Only time will tell, and only competition will tell, and only pressure will really tell us where we are. But it would have been fantastic to see how we would have hit our summer internationals and where we would be in the Cricket World League 2 log if cricket was to have been played. But we are where we are, you know, and I think everything happens for a reason. And I do believe that maybe at a time like this, it's allowed the players to, and I keep saying it, reflect on other things and refresh themselves and be ready to come back and hit the ground running when we're allowed to. But we were making great strides and we'd learnt a lot of lessons, you know, out of the World Cup qualifiers, but we had some really good cricket to look forward to. But we're in a good place.
And just one final question. Going back to South Africa, we were saying before, I mean, cricket is recognised as a national sport and has that high public profile, which in Scotland is yet to be achieved, even though the participation rates here are considerable. It's a stated aim of Cricket Scotland to get the nation to choose cricket. If you could bring in one thing to help in that aim, what would it be?
It's a very challenging question. I think... you know, I just think the schools have a big role to play, Jake, in all of this. You know, if I look back in my own playing career and I keep thinking, why is cricket so mainstream in South Africa? I think it's because at any given school, you can play the game of cricket. And when you can play the game of cricket in schools and you're exposed to it at a young age, I think it's far easier to take on this sport than if you're exposed to it at a later age. I also think clubs have a huge role to play in all of this, you know, and obviously during a time like this, a lot of clubs and a lot of schools will have taken a really big hit when it comes to cricket and various other sports. So I think we've got to be really clever in how we engage with the community in terms of getting people out playing cricket. I think we also have to move with the times. You know, I spoke about where will cricket be in 5 years' time. I think we've got to be really adventurous with our mindset in terms of where's the game going to and how do we keep people coming down and playing cricket. So I suppose the big thing for me is actually getting people involved in the game, whether that be at a really young age, whether that be a boy, a girl, whether you've got a disability, whether it's anything, you know. What form of cricket can you get involved in and how can you stay active doing that? I think that's probably the greatest challenge we have to answer in this country. The elements are against us, you know, so maybe we have to be the world leaders in synthetic surfaces. Maybe we have to be the world leaders in getting water off covers and allowing the game of cricket to go ahead, you know. So I think it's very easy to sometimes follow the rest of the world, but I think it's very important that we also think about what do we as Scotland want to do in terms of the game of cricket, and how can we make it a game that everybody wants to be involved in?
Well, Shane, it's great to talk to you, and it's great to be able to speak about something a bit more positive as well in terms of the recent news with the signs that cricket is maybe coming back for the summer.
Thanks, Jake. It's always great to chat to you, and you know, I'm always open to doing it in the future. So hopefully we will see a game of cricket pretty soon, but really looking forward to getting back to training. And, you know, for everybody out there, I hope that you're well, you're safe and you're healthy, and look forward to seeing cricket resuming pretty soon.
Shane Perger, always such a brilliant guest. My thanks to him again. And that's it from the Cricket Scotland podcast for this week. I'll be back next week with more chat from the world of Scottish cricket. But until then, stay safe and thanks again for listening.